Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Presidents serve and then ascend to the realm of libraries and history. How does Donald J. Trump look from that perspective as we come to the 100-day mark of his young presidency? Over the last week, On Point has teamed up with NPR and member stations around the country to ask that question in conversations at four presidential libraries around the country, gathering audiences at the libraries of Presidents Truman, Reagan, Carter, and Herbert Hoover. This hour, in a special edition of On Point, in collaboration with NPR's A Nation Engaged, The Power of the Presidency and This President, President Trump. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. At this early date, how do you see President Trump? And what mark do you think he may make on the presidency, on the country? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. There were panel conversations, really good ones, over the last week at four presidential libraries: at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library and Museum in Simi Valley, California, at the Jimmy Carter Presidential Library and Museum in Atlanta, at the Herbert Hoover Presidential Library in West Branch, Iowa, and at the Harry S. Truman Library and Museum in Independence, Missouri, each with NPR correspondents or hosts in attendance, as well as very often local hosts from local NPR member stations as well. I want to dive right in and give you a sense of the kind of conversations that have been taking place around the country with this project, A Nation Engaged. Here's Craig Shirley, a panelist at the KCLU Nation Engaged event at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library. Shirley is a Reagan biographer. He and Peter Robinson, a Ronald Reagan presidential historian, talked about some of the things that President Trump tweets, attacking people critical of him. Other presidents, they said, have popped off in private, but been more constrained in public.
Trump is only tweeting what we know Lyndon Johnson said.
Yes.
He's only tweeting what we said. Franklin Roosevelt popped off, was capable of popping off about his political opponents. On the other hand, so I don't know what to make of it.
And what do you think the effect on the office of the presidency is in this new world that we're living in?
Well, I think it diminishes its moral authority.
You do?
Yes. I think it's self-evident, is that whether it's his poll numbers or people who criticize him, I mean, there is, in the modern era, there always has been a majesty associated with the President of the United States. And in the modern era, probably with the advent of mass communication, because the President became more personal to us with the fireside chats. So there was always something, and we've obviously had dips, you know, with Nixon and Watergate and Carter and the malaise and George, both Bushes actually. We've always had dips, but there was always a majesty, a respect, an authority, not royalty, but something that we held very special in our eyes of the American president. And I'm not sure you should say that about Donald Trump.
There, the sound of A Nation Engaged, a Ronald Reagan biographer and a Ronald Reagan presidential historian talking at the Reagan Library, Presidential Library and Museum in Simi Valley, California. Hashtag A Nation Engaged, the NPR project in Independence, Missouri. We had Mark Jones, chairman of the Jackson County Republican Committee, attending KCUR's A Nation Engaged event at the Truman Presidential Library. He spoke about the hashtag of the event, A Nation Engaged, saying it should be changed to reflect how Americans are really feeling.
I look at your hashtag, and as I listened to the last two people speak, I thought one letter change in that hashtag is actually what happened in this last election. It could be called A Nation Enraged, because that's what really happened. Donald Trump spoke to the angry America who are tired of deficit, debt, overspending, irresponsibility, just a lot of things. No, we don't all have to agree on everything, but you do have to elect a leader. and one was elected. And it seemed like it only enraged more than it actually helped. And so currently you have a completely divided America. And I think being thoughtful about not enraging your opponent would be a good thing.
Is President Trump's style in office going to show us a path forward when it comes to learning how to disagree respectably?
I think that's exactly what you've saw. When you want to point out that he's said Mexico is going to pay for the wall and then he backs off of that, you do have to back off of some things, because sometimes you learn that you don't have all the facts, and sometimes you learn more things than, I mean, you have a different perspective once you learn more facts. There's a bit of tenacity that goes along with the presidency. And I think Trump has the personality and style to have the tenacity to outlast his opponents on some of these issues. Not every single one of them. But I wish we could stop poking each other in the eye, so to speak, and try to work together.
There, the sound of Americans thinking through the meaning of this young, new presidency. That from Independence, Missouri, Mark Jones, chairman of the local Republican committee there. You heard KCUR's Steve Kraske putting a question to him. And earlier from Simi Valley, California, and the Reagan Library, where you heard Wade Goodwin, NPR's Wade Goodwin, interjecting. We want to hear more from these A Nation Engaged conversations around the country in this hour. To help us do that, we turn to Austin, Texas, and John Burnett, NPR's Southwest correspondent. He moderated one of these four big conversations, his at the Truman Library in Independence, Missouri. John Burnett, welcome to On Point. Wonderful to have you here.
Hey, Tom. It's great to be with you.
And it was not only experts and historians at these gatherings. It was regular American citizens as well, listening and sharing their thoughts. One of those joins us now from Atlanta, Michelle Andawele. She was in WABE's A Nation Engaged event at the Carter Presidential Library this week. She's executive editor at the Arthritis Foundation. She voted for Hillary Clinton in November's election. Michelle Andawele, welcome to On Point. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
And with us from Cedar Falls, Iowa, is Althea Cole. She participated in Iowa Public Radio's A Nation Engaged event at the Hoover Presidential Library in West Branch, Iowa. She's a professional pet sitter, political volunteer, voted for Donald Trump in November's election. Althea Cole, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Althea, what did you think of the value of this gathering and the conversation you heard there? Are people really engaged right now in thinking about President Donald Trump?
I definitely think that people are engaged in thinking about President Trump. If you turn on the TV, you cannot avoid thinking about President Trump. Are they engaged in paying attention to what he is doing as a president? That's kind of up in the air. It all depends on what kind of information sources one follows and what the narrative is from those sources.
Michelle, you didn't come in as a supporter of this president, but you were listening closely in Atlanta. Do you hear Trump supporters feeling affirmed by what he's done in these first 100 or so days? Did you hear more from Trump critics about their concerns?
I think I experienced an equal mix of both concern as well as support. And I believe that what I find most instructive for what is happening now is how many more people are engaged in accessing information. And unfortunately, a lot of people are in their bubble with regard to information. But I have been in this country as a citizen. I'm an immigrant from Jamaica, and I have been here for George H.W. Bush, Clinton, W. Bush, and Obama. And I have seen a significant surge in interest. And I think that's a part of what the bedrock of this democracy requires, is for citizens to be engaged. Even though we fundamentally disagree and we are very polarized, a lot more people are paying attention, and I think that's a good thing.
Wade Goodwin, you were there in Independence, Missouri, at the Truman Library. We heard the local Republican committee chairman saying you might have made your hashtag A Nation Enraged. What was the tone of the gathering there in Independence, Missouri, John Burnett? Pardon me. Forgive me. Was it an enraged nation, an engaged nation, both, neither?
Well, this president is very divisive, and people are reacting, I think, as both our other guests have said, very polarized. We didn't hear anyone who was actually on the fence. it was interesting that most people, I think, are withholding their judgment, you know, in these presidential libraries where you have these grand archives of, you know, the accomplishments of these notable, you know, chief executives. Trump is a very young president. Having said that, there were a number of folks who were very, I think, patient with him, you could say. They voted for him and believe that, you know, he is someone who's outside the box. He's non-traditional. And as one gentleman said, Roy, retired from manufacturing, if he accomplishes a third of the things that he's proposed, I'll be happy. Really, if I could to put it in my own words, it's as though these folks had given the middle finger to the status quo in Washington, and Mr. Trump is accurately delivering that message to the Washington establishment.
Well, that's a pretty straightforward message, you know, and especially an interesting perspective from, as you say, presidential libraries, where everything becomes kind of up in the heavens and looking down from history. I suppose when you heard from historians and others, Wade, I mean, John, excuse me, when these earlier presidents were in power, they were scrappier too.
Right. And it was interesting because there was a tweet question about, well, should we consider President Trump's tweets the way we do, you know, President Johnson's, you know, famous phone calls right here in the LBJ Library in Austin,
or the wrathful, you know, calls,
right, which were they're great. I've heard them. I mean, and you know, no holds barred. And absolutely, there was a presidential archivist there who said, you know, the tweets will be part of the record. But there was also a Truman historian there who could compare President Trump to other presidents, and he said, you know, he is uniquely, you know, without precedent for this job. He wasn't a soldier, and you know, he'd held no elective office, and you know, even Truman had, you know, he'd been a county judge and a senator and a vice president for a short while before.
John Burnett, hold the thought right there. We're looking at the American presidency and Donald Trump with a nation engaged. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the American presidency and Donald Trump, how Trump fits with tradition, how he does not, and where he points the nation. This is a special edition of On Point in collaboration with NPR's initiative, A Nation Engaged. This time through conversations over the last week at presidential libraries around the country. The Reagan Library in Simi Valley, California, the Jimmy Carter Library in Atlanta, Herbert Hoover Library in West Branch, Iowa, and the Harry S. Truman Library and Museum in Independence, Missouri. John Burnett, NPR's Southwest correspondent, was there in Independence, Missouri, to help coordinate that conversation. We have guests from two others as well. Michelle Andewele was in Atlanta at the Carter Museum. Althea Cole was in Cedar Falls, Iowa. She was at the Iowa Public Radio's Nation Engaged event at the Hoover Presidential Library this week. They attending as citizens interested in where we stand as a country with this president right now. You can join us in this hour. How do you see this president? Is Donald Trump breaking new ground in good ways, bad ways? Will he change the presidency or be seen as an outlier, one of a kind? Very active conversations across the country as part of A Nation Engaged. Here was just a moment when Ben Kiefer, Iowa Public Radio host, moderating the event A Nation Engaged there at the Hoover Library in West Branch, held a clapping poll to see how people feel about the office and the president.
Clap if you think the office of the presidency is too powerful. Clap now if you think it's not powerful enough. Okay, clap if you think it's Goldilocks just about right.
Okay, powerful, maybe too powerful, seemed to win out right there. And speaking about Donald Trump and how his approach to power and strength. This was Karen Spaulding. She attended the Truman Library event in Independence, Missouri, said voters were looking for something different in the presidency when they voted for Donald Trump.
He doesn't care what anybody thinks, as we well know. But I think his voters wanted that. I think we're tired of diplomacy to the point where it's so wishy-washy that we don't have anybody making a strong voice for what we believe in. And it's been many, many years since we heard a candidate stand up strong and not be concerned about this issue or that issue to the point where we did not even know where he stood. And when Donald Trump came to the getting ready for the presidency, he was strong, and he said these things, and we said, wow, someone is finally voicing what we are feeling. And even if it was rude, even if he did have some checkered past, we didn't care about the past. We only cared for what was happening at that time and what he had to say.
There, Donald Trump as a symbol of strength to Karen Spaulding, a citizen in Independence, Missouri. But at the event at the Hoover Library in West Branch, Iowa, here was Lynn Smith, stood up and said, but President Trump is too all over the place to really be strong.
It's not good as we're looking at the presidency, not just as a one-issue thing, but it's got foreign policy, it's got economics, it's got all kinds of... It's a really big job. And to be unpredictable and I'll do it this way, no, I'll do it that way, and oh, China manipulates money, oh, no, they don't. Oh, somebody does this. Oh, no, they're not. NATO's irrelevant. Oh, no, it's not. It's too wishy-washy, and that doesn't help us. It makes us look wishy-washy. It doesn't help our allies because they don't know what side we're on, and it doesn't help. It might confuse the opponents, which that might be good as subterfuge, but beyond that, I'm not thinking this is great.
Not so great. One view there from Iowa, and then at the Reagan Library in Simi Valley, we had, again, the presidential historian, Peter Robinson, a Reagan historian, talking here with Wade Goodwin about how President Trump is outside the tradition of the American presidency, how that may affect the power of the presidency and his own over time.
He's unlike past presidents. He's very much an outsider, and he has less experience of government, less knowledge about what to do as president than, I think it's fair to say, than any other man who's held the office. And here's where he's falling more and more into the tradition. The Constitution of the United States is an amazingly persistent arrangement, document and arrangement. And although when he took office and there was the fear that he was going to be authoritarian and Mussolini and so on and so forth, he has found himself within the confines of the Constitution, like every chief executive before him. He writes an executive order, the courts hold it up, and he complies with the courts. He works Congress on a piece of legislation that he cares about very much.
Repealing Obamacare.
Repealing Obamacare. And it doesn't go through, and he lets it pass. He has discovered... He's not an authoritarian. He's not a Mussolini. In fact, my concern about Donald Trump is that precisely because, A, he doesn't know what he's doing, and B, he lacks a truly broad base of support, he'll prove too weak rather than too strong. But what's happening right when I say he doesn't know what he's doing, he's learning. This is a highly intelligent man. And what he keeps bumping into is the Constitution of the United States. The document endures, and he will be more in the tradition of presidents every day that passes.
From NPR's A Nation Engaged Conversation at the Reagan Library in Simi Valley, California, there with Peter Robinson, a Reagan presidential historian. John Burnett is with us, NPR Southwest correspondent. He moderated the Independence, Missouri event. Michelle Andewele is with us. She was in Atlanta. Althea Cole is with us. She was at the Hoover Library event in West Branch, Iowa. Althea, you have been a Trump supporter. You heard the Reagan presidential historian there saying he's concerned that President Trump may ultimately prove too weak dealing within not a private corporation where he's the CEO, but within the constraints of the U.S. Constitution. What are you thinking about this president's effectiveness in this first chapter of his presidency so far and how it may unfold over time, Althea?
I haven't seen anything yet that's going to suggest to me that President Trump is going to be weak in his presidency. We did a lot of discussion where I was on Tuesday night at the Hoover Library, of course, about the role of the presidency as it relates to what is spelled out in the Constitution. And a friend of mine, Don Rochter, he was there that night. He is the president of the Public Interest Institute in Muscatine. He's quite the policy expert. I think that he would have made a good addition to the show today, but NPR wanted the sassy Midwestern blonde with a smart mouth. But he made a great point, and he said, you know, it spells out in Article 1 what Congress does, and it spells out in Article 2 what the president does. But we've seen over time that Congress has slowly ceded a lot of their incredible authority to the office of the presidency. A lot of that has to do with the fact that they are there for their own purposes, and part of that purpose is to get reelected. It really stood out to me what Don said. So I went ahead and I kind of thought about that over the last 24 hours after I was asked to come on Point. And I found an article written by Jim Webb back in 2013. Now, former Senator Jim Webb, he ran for president under the Democratic ticket in 2016. And he said, as in so many other areas where powers disappear through erosion rather than revolution, many members of Congress do not appreciate the power they actually hold. And he cited some very profound examples. He cited President Bush in 2008 when he signed what was called a strategic framework agreement with the nation of Iraq, not a treaty. So he didn't need to go to Congress to get that two-thirds approval, but it still spelled out our involvement for years to come. And again, he never involved Congress. And at the time he went to view the document, Senator Webb noticed that he was the only person who had signed the log to even access the place where it was read. 2012, same thing. President Obama signed what the White House called a legally binding executive agreement, and that spelled out the terms of some extensive military and economic aid that we had for the long term with Afghanistan.
Althea, we've got we've got some tape of your friend Dan Rochter right here from the Iowa event, and let me play it, because he goes, as you say, to this point about what about Congress here and its role? Maybe that is changing what's required of the president. Here he was at the event in Iowa at the Hoover Library.
The Congress, they were supposed to make policy for our country. That's what the Founding Fathers intended. And yet we find that both the court and the president are much more looked to as policymakers today, and it's mostly because Congress has abdicated their role. They've found that being a congressman is a very cushy proposition, and so they try to get reelected. And the way to do that is to bring home the bacon and take care of people's problems as an ombudsman, rather than to stand up on policy issues. Because when you stand up on policy issues, you make half the people happy, but you make half the people upset. Nobody gets upset if you help Aunt Sadie get her Social Security squared away. And so it's the problem that we have too much presidential power, too much court power, because Congress doesn't want to exercise the power they're supposed to do.
There, Americans thinking through where we stand with this president and the execution of power in this country under President Donald Trump. John Burnett, what about the issue of presidential power and how it's deployed? What did you hear in the conversation at the Truman Library? I mean, it was give him hell, Harry, after all. Were people saying, exactly, well, that's what you've got in Donald Trump?
Well, it was interesting, Tom. I had a back and forth with Max Skidmore, who's a presidential scholar there at the University of Missouri. And I asked him, you know, there was a lot of expectation that Donald Trump was going to come in as an emperor, that he had, you know, he considered he had this great mandate. And so he starts issuing these executive orders, and that he was going to be really using the power of the presidency. And yet, so far, it doesn't seem to be the case, as I think the Reagan scholar said. You know, he's been stymied in so many areas, whether in trying to renegotiate Obamacare or, you know, federal courts tying him up with the travel ban. Now, his own party is very suspicious, skeptical of the Great Wall between the U.S. and Mexico. And so that's been put on the shelf. And so, you know, he, not at all coming in as an emperor, but actually, you know, learning that, you know, things are the way they are for a reason. And this is really a much harder job than I thought it was. And so in terms of, you know, the imperial presidency, the term which really came out of, I think, the Nixon era, and Arthur Schlesinger wrote that book in 73 about it. you know, we're not seeing an imperial president here. Now, maybe he will, you know, learn the powers of office and, you know, how to work it like Lyndon Johnson eventually, but it's a very long and steep learning curve.
Tim Walsh, presidential historian, was at the Iowa event at the Hoover Library in West Branch, Iowa, describing how President Trump is outside the tradition of the American presidency during his first 100 days in office. May have come in thinking of a sort of CEO approach, a command presidency, but the office has its own constraints.
What makes President Trump different is he's so unvarnished and uncalculated in the way he presents his views to the American people, and many people find that refreshing. On the other hand, he's also defining what you might call a command presidency based on his experience as the head of the Trump Organization. When Mr. Trump wanted something done, it got done. The problem with a command presidency is that he's got two other partners who have as much power as he has, and he's realized that he can be frustrated. He can say, we will build this wall, but he still has to get the funds from Congress. He has to go forward, and that's been a source of frustration. And I think slowly as he has gone through this first 100 days, he's realized, this isn't what I thought it is.
We're hearing from a nation engaged in conversations at four presidential libraries around the country over this past week as we come to the 100-day mark of the Trump presidency. John Burnett is with us from Austin, Texas. Althea Cole from Cedar Falls, Iowa. Michelle Andewele attended the event at the Carter Library in Atlanta, Georgia. Calls for the three of you, and let me go to some. Providence, Rhode Island, Matt is calling. Matt, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi, panel.
Hi.
My comment is... just watching the past events of the past, the Trump presidency, I don't see how the status of the office will recover because, you know, we have this guy lies every day. We have the ongoing investigation into Russian collusion. And until we have answers on that, I don't see how we can be expected to rally behind this. We have new leaks every day, people like Nunes and Jason Chaffetz obstructing the investigation, and, you know, I don't see how, when this is all resolved, there can be any kind of elevation in the level of the presidency. How is it not going to be tarnished by that, I guess is my question.
Matt, I appreciate your call. Michelle Andewele, you were there in Atlanta at the Carter Museum. Did you hear that kind of dire concern from fellow citizens and attendees there, Michelle?
Yes, I did. I think in my group, we were significantly concerned that the office of the presidency has been diminished and that Americans will have to work collectively in order for us to regain the stature that this country has around the world. And we also talked a lot about the misperception of braggadocio and bullying as strength and how the president is reframing how people look at the office of the presidency and the extent to which the traditions of truthfulness and decorum and honesty are being significantly challenged. And this represents a real opportunity for us to reframe this current occupant of the White House as an anomaly rather than a standard, regardless of party. It's an opportunity for us to elevate principle over party for the office of the presidency and for the stature of this nation.
Althea Cole, there in Iowa, what about those concerns of a president who turns to braggadocio, bullying, who may not, at least as some attendees in Atlanta are conveyed here, who may not be entirely committed to truthfulness and honesty? What do you think of that line of critique, Althea?
Well, I can definitely understand where the line of critique, is coming from. When I spoke with the producer about coming on this show, I asked her about the other participants, and if I can be so forward, it was confirmed for me that Michelle in, where are you, Michelle, Georgia, Atlanta, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Just as I stated that I voted for Trump, it was stated that Michelle stated that she voted for Hillary. And paying attention to the campaigns, both of the campaigns, because I was quite active in the campaigning, and I'm also quite active in grassroots organizing here in the state of Iowa, I noticed that the messages were much different between the campaigns. Both campaigns were extremely, extremely negative. But at the same time, Mr. Trump, candidate Trump at the time, he also had a positive message, make America great again, and a sub message of I'm not a politician. That was a good thing to the American people. To Hillary supporters, the message was Trump is bad. Trump is bad. Unfortunately, they overshot their landing on that strong narrative a little bit, and that extended to you are bad if you vote for Trump, which definitely caused a lot of problems. But also, the Hillary Clinton campaign was expecting to win. The fact that they did not, the fact that their supporters did not get what they were looking for, they have nothing with which they can replace that sentiment. So I can understand that they are very skeptical of the Trump campaign and the Trump presidency so far.
Support for this podcast and the following message comes from ZipRecruiter, who understands when you run a business, you've got important decisions to make every day, like hiring. ZipRecruiter makes finding quality candidates simple. With one click at ZipRecruiter.com/OP, you can post your job to 100 leading job sites across the web and manage your candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to hire. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/OP.
I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is a special edition of On Point in collaboration with NPR's A Nation Engaged project, a project that in this last week has gone out around the country to four presidential libraries, Hoover, Carter, Reagan, and Truman, all over the country, talking with presidential historians and with American citizens about how they see the Trump presidency as we come to the 100-day mark in that presidency. John Burnett is with us. He was moderator for the event in Independence, Missouri, at the Truman Library there. Althea Cole was at the Hoover Presidential Library this week in Iowa. Michelle Andewele was at the Carter Library in Atlanta, and they join us for this hour. You can join us as well. What do you think? Do you see Trump, Donald Trump, in the give-em-hell Harry mold like Harry Truman? Is Trump's presidential style good for American democracy? Is it a threat to our democratic traditions? I want to give you a sense of what people were hearing and saying at these meetings around the country pulled together by NPR. This was at KCUR's Nation Engaged event at the Truman Presidential Library, Independence, Missouri. This is Dan Hall, said Trump, President Trump, is giving what his voters wanted.
I do think that voters were interested in jobs, the economy. They saw a businessman that could make a change and bring jobs to this country. The coal miners were out of work. He wanted to put them back to work, and is doing so, and has met with some of the major corporations in this company and encourage them to bring jobs back to America. And I think this is exactly what the 40% or more of the people in this country voted for, and I think he's doing exactly what we wanted.
Listening to the voices of people thinking about the presidency of Donald Trump. But here was another, Judy Allen, in Iowa at the Hoover Presidential Library in West Branch, saying she does not trust this president so far because she says he is too secretive.
There's a lot at stake for all of us here. We want him to succeed, but I have such a hard time looking at our current president because of the lack of transparency, no tax forms. True, he doesn't have to give them up, but wouldn't it be good to let us know what he was really invested in? The amount of blood, his own blood that he has that is profiting from the appointments that he's made of his own family members in his own cabinet, the what I would call kind of sad state of qualifications of so many cabinet members. Some are okay, but you have to question people's judgment when it is so blatant that all of this is about protecting something. Oh, not to mention then the Russia stuff that we keep getting bits and pieces and leaked out about that. There's something very troubling about having the president of our country be so secretive and unforthcoming with information. I think if he wants our trust and our belief and our vote again, he needs to show us that he is really for the people. And I don't believe that's happened so far.
Voices pro and con on Donald Trump from around the country in NPR's A Nation Engaged project. Let me give you a couple more here. This was from Independence, Missouri, the Truman Presidential Library. Dave Boehner attended. Here he was.
If he can accomplish a third of the goals that he set out that got him elected, I'll be a happy camper. Because, you know, he's a third of the government, he has a third of the powers, and, you know, he has to deal with the Senate, he has to deal with the Supreme Court, and all those people have their say, as that's how the Constitution was put together. So, you know, how much can he accomplish? If he accomplishes a third, I'm a happy camper.
A happy camper there in Independence, Missouri. But right next to that citizen, another Deborah Parmet at the Truman Library, saying she was afraid of the Trump presidency having too much power.
I'm still greatly afraid because the Nazi regime said the way to make the truth that would be what you wanted it to be. You tell a lie, you keep telling it, and the bigger the lie you tell, the sooner the people are going to believe it. And that's what they did. And that is very scary, right? I think. And I think we've seen that a lot. And I think that while he is not yet a dictator, maybe an even imperialistic president, we have... not him, but we have done some things as a country to really inhibit our true democracy.
You can hear the range of voices right there as Americans take stock of the presidency of Donald Trump in presidential libraries across the country. John Burnett, Michelle Andewele, Althea Cole, please stand by. Tereska is calling from Miami, Florida. Tereska, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I think... whether you voted for Trump or not, what I think everyone is in agreement about is that there is a new level of civic engagement in our government. Really, as the president is learning his job, we're learning his job. And I, for one, have been calling my congressional representatives, both Senate and House of Representatives, every week, if and sometimes every day. And I know many of my cohorts who never made a call before in their lives have been doing similar activities. Now, personally, I believe Trump will be impeached within 12 months. But the great thing about this is that we will be ready. We will be ready for a new administration. We'll be ready for a clean administration and one that is focused on the American people and focused on bringing peace and stability to the world.
Tereska in Miami, I appreciate your call. Althea Cole in Cedar Falls, Iowa. Do you see this a higher level of civic engagement as people respond positively and negatively to President Trump?
I suppose, yeah. I'll correct you really quickly. My name is pronounced Althea with the emphasis on the second syllable. I hope that's okay to correct you. I suppose I do see a higher level of civic engagement. I don't know if I'd call it civic, though. Yes, there have been a lot of people who have mobilized over their anger, over their opposition to Donald Trump. And I, you know, let's call them the Indivisible Group, for example. They talk about how they want to use the same tactics that the Tea Party did back in 2010 when they organized and when they were successful in helping the Republican Party take back the United States House. I don't think that they're going to be as effective, nearly as effective as they think they are. I think a lot of the civic engagement that people who are starting to finally do, like our caller from Tampa, she says she calls her congressman every week, if not every day. I'd like to give our caller the benefit of the doubt and assume that she is calling with her own messages or her own questions. But I know that a lot of the engagement that I've seen is from other organizations saying, hey, copy and paste this email to your congressman. Make this phone call and read from this script to your congressman. And that's not going to be nearly as effective as they think it's going to be.
John Burnett,
Tom, may I jump in here?
Sure, please do.
Because the civic engagement is so widespread that HCA, the first version of the Republican bill to repeal Obamacare, had to be scuttled when there is a Republican House and a Republican Senate and a Republican in the White House. That's civic engagement that's beyond indivisible. Just this weekend, my colleagues went to the Science March that thousands of people attended. We have Republicans being challenged in special elections in red districts right here in Georgia, District 6. John Ossoff is in a runoff in Tom Price's old seat. That is beyond one group. That is from the ground up grassroots engagement. And I do agree with the caller that one of the things that Trump has done is awakened in this country a sense of we are the people, we are responsible for our leaders, and when we sleep, deviations like Trump happen.
Just out of curiosity, how much of the money for this ground-up grassroots race in which John Ossoff did not win but rather went to a runoff, how much of the money that is funding that race came from inside the state of Georgia versus outside the state of Georgia and more specifically the state of California, which is 2,000 miles away?
I think the more important point is a lot of John's support is national because around the country, regardless of where you live as a progressive or a Democrat, you are invested in every race because the congressman in Atlanta affects you in Michigan.
And do the people of Georgia like being told who should they should vote for?
Well, we've got it, and we know a lot came from outside. But then, of course, in earlier Republican races, you've seen large efforts there from around the country as well. It's not as though that is absolutely unique. John Burnett, you're listening in here. You've been reporting for years. What about the level of civic engagement as Americans at this, you know, you can call it an artificial mark, but here it is nevertheless, at 100 days, take stock of this presidency?
You know, I think there's a different way to judge Donald Trump because he is so outside the box. It's almost as though some of his supporters that I heard in Independence the other night were indifferent to the news cycle that consumes you and me, Tom, and NPR. Mm-hmm. And then I'm an immigration reporter, and so there's been a tremendous amount back and forth every day to report on. You know, they're taking this long view that these are the growing pains of a non-politician. They see, you know, he's a change agent. He's going to be dislocating and upsetting the apple cart. And so it's almost as though they're sort of suspending a judgment when we are all trying to nail this president down as to, you know, what is going to be in his presidential library and what are historians going to say. And it's really – it's you know, in my experience of, you know, covering news for, gosh, 35 years mm-hmm. now, it's as though he's being – you know, by his supporters are really, you know, sort of judging him differently.
Judging him differently, though, there may be some suspending judgment, but we can hear plenty of judgment right here. Art in Stevens Point, Wisconsin. Art, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
How you doing, Tom?
Okay, what do you see, Art?
Yeah, I'm a Trump supporter, and I'm tired of all these entitlements. Everybody getting a free ride, and I'm working, you're working, and all that,
yep.
And you got all the health insurance being paid for, all everything else, the people not working, all they're doing is collecting welfare, collecting this, collecting that. Well, they should get out and work, just like the rest of us.
Do you think that the president's policies will bring the jobs for people to go out and get, Art?
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I mean, keeping jobs in this country, that's the way to go here. I mean, everything going out. So, and then, you know, everybody jumping on him, the media jumping on him, media, you know, I mean, giving him a hard time because he's trying to do these things. And, you know, because the media is afraid to be offended, you know, they can't offend anybody.
You're ready?
By that.
Well, I don't know about that, but I can hear you're ready to give him time, and you see a handout nation out there. Many perspectives on this country and many heard at NPR's A Nation Engaged events at presidential libraries around the country in this last week. We're looking at that right now in a special edition of On Point. Let's go to Francis. Art, thanks for your call. Francis in Bolton, Massachusetts. Francis, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I was just calling because I've been hearing a lot of tippy-toeing around a lot of the legal issues that are facing Trump in his first 100 days, the Russian issue, obviously, but also it hasn't been brought up, but his emolument cases against him. And I'm wondering, like, in addition to what the commentator in the clip from the Reagan Library stated, that his Trump's lack of knowledge of the Constitution would weaken him, I'm also seeing that his legal issues are weakening him because you can see allies having to distance themselves from him as these get larger and larger and loom closer and closer to him. And I was wondering if we could bring, like, all of the for him or against him or whatever opinions you have. There are some very large legal issues that are facing this president, and because he has his same party in the House and in the Senate, it seems like these issues, if you had an opposition party, would have already led to impeachment or at least bigger investigations. And I'm wondering if, you know, and I see it starting to weaken him as a president, and I'm wondering if even people who support him are worried about these legal issues.
Let us pick it up, Francis, and I appreciate your call. John Burnett at the Truman Library, were people focused on this? Was this an important point, the troubles that Trump has run into over the Russia investigation and so on?
No. I would say, well, certainly his detractors are focused on it. That's one of many things that they think he's completely unfit for the presidency. But it just wasn't an issue. It wasn't on screen for really the many people who spoke and, up for him. The fact that he hadn't released tax returns, that he's got you know, his financial conflicts of interest, that there's the investigation into Russia. It was, you know, reminds me of when I covered Ross Perot. He said that's just gorilla dust. They thought that was a distraction. You know, let the change agent give him time.
time. Althea, are you concerned over time about how these investigations may play out?
Well, interestingly enough, every time I ask somebody who was not in support of candidate Trump for the presidency, I ask them about, you know, what is it about these legal issues? What is your understanding of the legal issues? And interestingly enough, I've never come across a person who has been able to successfully articulate even what these legal issues are. That being said, President Trump, you know, would not be the
first president.
Pretty
straightforward on Russia. Yes. The issue is, was there foreign intervention and was there collusion between the Trump camp and Russia? I mean, that's what the question is, right?
And there are other legal issues, too, as well, Tom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There are many. I mean, if you just want to look at his hotels, his golf courses, and his other businesses, we need to understand if his actions in office are for public good or for his family's private gain. And without him releasing his tax returns, we'll never be sure. And that's why a lot of these emolument clause cases are designed to try to force his hand to release his tax returns so that we can understand, is he the chief executive for the United States of America, or is he continuing to support the more than 500 limited liability companies that have the Trump name and or an affiliation through one of his three adult children and or Jared Kushner. So they're really a long list of issues.
It is amazing. John Burnett, here we are, four gatherings in four libraries, lots of history looming over these conversations. But the conversation right now, of course, as with every president, is in the moment. I mean, people are trying to figure this out and quickly. 100 days is 3 months and change. Do you hear people making what sound to you like lasting judgments about this president, John, this early on, or are these provisional judgments at this point?
I'd say it's a point in time, and it's going to be a long continuum. And with this president uniquely, it's hard to say what his legacy is going to be, because his learning pains are so obvious as we're watching this. And so he has really stirred people up, and there was no one on the fence in Independence, Missouri. You were either for or against. He's going to be possibly a great president, or really a terrible president.
What's your optimism level right now, Althea? In a word?
Whee!
I guess that counts as over the moon. And Michelle in Atlanta, Georgia. Michelle Anduwele?
I'm not sure you can go lower than a zero.
Wow. Talk about over the moon and lower than a zero. You got the full range right there. And just some of the sound of Americans gathering in presidential libraries over the last week to think about the first 100 days of President Donald Trump. I want to thank all three of you for being with us. John Burnett, who moderated that conversation at the Truman Library in Independence, Missouri. John, thank you very much for being with us today.
You bet. It was fun, Tom.
Michelle Anduwele in Atlanta. Thank you, Michelle.
You bet.
Althea Cole in Cedar Falls, Iowa. Thank you, Althea.
This is a good time. Thanks.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.